So back to what I was saying. What I was saying.
Is there a publicist worth their salt that would touch this thing, giving the fallout and the blow up of the first
one? Come on, what idiot would truly be like, hey, I want to go through the defamation in prison again? Back to what I was saying. What's up, what's up, what's up, friends, family, and fans? Welcome to Life on Podcast. This is where we listen and inspire friends in entertainment.
And everywhere.
Yeah, because life happens to everyone. I am your co-host, Stone Stafford, with my ride or die,
Johnny Vaughn. What it is, what it
Johnny
do.
Vaughn, what it is, what it do. Now, we are here joined with Mr. Chad Shearer. What up, Chad?
What's going on? Happy to be here.
The Chad. I'm the Chad. What movie was that?
That was, I believe, a
The Girls.
Charlie's Angels.
Charlie's Angels. Yeah. I'm the Chad. Yeah. He's the Chad.
It's Tom Green. Tom Green. Actually, I've traded emails with him, and his email is about as basic as you can imagine. Wait, I was Tom shocked. Tom at TomGreen.com.
I mean, that makes sense. Well, I'm Stone Stafford.com.
I mean, at the time, he was Tom Green, right. Maybe have a little bit more complex email, right. But you know, no, not him.
That's hilarious. That is hilarious. So we brought Chad on because Chad has a very interesting job. When you say, hey, what do you want to do in entertainment? Chances are this job description isn't on there because it's not in front of a mic or in front of a camera or something like that. But you do PR.
Correct.
For music festivals.
Yes.
Or is that one of the things that you do? Let's go ahead and break down. So you have this company. What's the name of your company? How'd you start? And we'll kind of just flow from there.
Okay. The name of the company is Karen West PR. My business partner, obviously the company's namesake, Karen. Okay. And I started out originally as a dual agency, half PR, half graphic design. I was going to be the graphic design guy. Which I had done previously for a long time. Mm. As we evolved, the publicity side of things got so big that I stepped into what is a secondary passion of mine, music, to take over that vertical of what we do. But we also do restaurant PR. When major brands come to town like Gucci or the Fry Company or whatnot, we represent them.
Okay. PR.
Yeah, all over the place.
It's a name that gets thrown around all the time. Yes. And I know plenty of people, I do PR. All right, can you please, for someone that does it on an elite level, can you please tell us what is PR and what makes a good PR firm or person? Like, what is it? If someone's looking for a PR person,
right,
this is what you should be looking for. This is what this person should be bringing to the table.
Okay, PR, let's go real base level.
That's
public relations.
Okay.
That's
101.
Not Puerto Rico.
Okay.
Not so Pirata.
We're through that. Public relations. At very base level, our job is to create exposure, either virally or an actual print, radio, TV, online, whatever it would be, to further promote your cause. You know, get people in butts and seats at restaurants, get tickets sold at festivals, people buying your brand, you know, whatever it would be. Our particular blend PR, what I tell my mother is, if it's fun to do and you go out to do it, we represent it probably in some capacity. Hmm. You know, from the beer you crack, we represent Wild Heaven beer, to the clothes that you wear, be it Gucci or whatever, going out to see the art at the art gallery or going to a music festival. As far as what makes a good publicist, relationships.
All right, so wait, you just said that because I was just about to ask you. You got PR, public relations, right?
Yep.
And then publicist. And a publicist does PR? Yes. Is that what it is? Okay. So
you know, you got a law firm and then you have attorneys. Yep. Or yeah.
Ooh. Just right out of arm's reach. Right? No, that's not a dap. That's a fist in the jaw right there. So part of what you're saying, so as part of your job, are you also responsible for the lens that the public sees your client through? Is that your responsibility as well?
We control the narrative.
That's what I wanted to get. Okay. Yeah. See, and for some reason, I knew that fell for a publicist, But I don't know why I thought a publicist mm-hmm. was different from a PR firm. So okay.
the narrative gets out of your control. It's our job to write that course as well.
Gotcha.
So crisis PR, we do, unfortunately.
Or set it right from the gate.
Yep.
I'm so happy. Let's. You know what? Before we get into the entertainment PR side of it, I know he already knows what it is. All right. So we had a major event here in Atlanta a week or two ago.
Okay.
Where a very prominent former head of state turned himself in.
Yes.
You saw how that was handled.
Mm-hmm. For a selfie photo shoot.
Exactly. you saw the lead up to it from a social media standpoint and from a media standpoint because mm-hmm. it became a fire thing. Now, here in the city of Atlanta, there's a football game happening here that night as well. From a public relations standpoint, do you think it was handled successfully as far as how the story was presented to the masses? Or did it lean more towards the political public nightmare side?
This is going to be more opinion, but I would say it leaned more to the political side.
Okay.
I think that people were pretty anxious to see it all go through and happen without really thinking through what's the collapse of what's going to happen in the future.
Okay.
So that's just my opinion. I am not a political person.
I'm not going to try to drag you into it. It's always fun to see people who are tangential in the arena to see what their takes are when it happens.
I think that the timing of it was definitely calculated and probably correctly advised.
Yeah. Okay.
I mean, all that will fall into PR.
Though. Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. PR, I mean, it happened here in the city of Atlanta during a football game. Also, the night of, I believe there was a debate going on for the Republican
convention. There were a lot of distractions.
There's a lot of stuff happening.
Yeah.
So your take is they handle it relatively the right way.
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, I think the goal, because of that debate, was missing a particular key person that also turned themselves in. I think the goal was to defuse the value of the debate by doing it immediately after. And so we're no longer talking about any of those other candidates because we're talking about the mugshot.
Right. There we go.
Right.
Okay.
Interesting.
That was the take I had too. I wanted to see if I was barking up the right tree with how I was analyzing the way it was handled. Okay.
I didn't analyze it at all. Question.
So I do way more fun PR than let's get to that
because you started to describe what makes a good PR person. Like, what is it that someone should look for?
I was going to actually. The relationships make the publicists. That's why we get people come in, and a lot of colleges kind of fill these new publicist candidates' heads with, you should be making X amount of dollars right out of the gate. And I'm like, who are your relationships? And if you don't have them, I'm willing to take a chance on you, but we're not going to take a chance on you at the salary that your professor said you should have.
Right.
We're going to develop you and get you to that salary once you have those relationships. So relationships are king. One thing I would tell you, if you're going to hire a publicist to run away with, anyone that can that starts making promises.
Okay.
PR is hard to quantify. And if they're like, oh, I can definitely get you in Time Magazine or Wall Street Journal or whatever their goals are, if they're making promises, run the other way, because there's no way they're just going to waste your money.
Regardless of the relationship? Just imagining that they had those
juicy
relationships?
If they have the relationships, then yeah. But we have one of my better friends and a very prominent writer here in Atlanta, guy by name Michael Jordan. He is actually just got signed on, and Mike, I apologize if I get this wrong, for the AJC as far as their black cultural writing. Mm-hmm. He used to write, for the Wall Street Journal and get all that type of stuff. Just because I have that relationship doesn't mean that you're getting that.
Right.
Sure. Okay. That makes sense. So artists, if you have a PR person who says, oh, yeah, we can get you into this, we can get you into that, your question should be, oh, who do you know over there? First and foremost. Mm-hmm. And then even after they say who they know, then just in the back of your mind be like, okay, but I know you can't really promise me that.
You also, that's basically what you're saying. In the first month that we do PR for any account, we never make any promises that we're going to get you in anywhere. We're trying to embroil ourselves and immerse ourselves in your culture.
Right.
So especially if you're a recording artist and I look at you and be like, oh, I'm going to do this, but I haven't heard your stuff. I mean, what kind of BS is that? Right. You know.
And I like how you said you said it's hard to quantify because on the artist side or on my side, non-PR, one of the first things I'm thinking of, okay, I'm bringing you on for 3 months, 90 days. And at the end of the 90 days, if all of a sudden I'm not on a bunch of stuff, all of a sudden I'm like, you know, this isn't working. You know, and that's probably, I'm assuming that's obviously not a very fair shake. I
mean, 90 days is very quick to turn and burn on something like that. We typically shy away from anything less than 6 months, but...
And why is that? Break it down to then why 6 months? Like, what does that progression look like?
That ramp-up period, you need to... One, I'm getting to... I should be able to speak about your project almost as well as you should.
Okay,
so that takes a minute. And plus, I mean, so say you want to be in any kind of glossy magazine, they're 3 to 4 months out.
Mm-hmm.
So I might be working on stories, you get frustrated after 90 days, and then the stories hit in 120 days
right.
or whatever it would be. We'll do a 3 month, but it's more considered, we make it clear it's in like an exposure gig. We're going to create a lot of static and noise. And not necessarily, we don't know if things are going to stick or not. We don't know what the news cycles are or whatnot. I mean, that being said, my business partner, we signed someone, and the very next morning she had him on TV. So we do have skills.
But just right. Now, would you classify that as static and noise? Even though being on TV is significant, is it something that was recurring on TV?
No.
So would you classify that as static and noise? Because I'm glad you brought that up. I don't mean to be hogging your airtime, Johnny. He's just bringing up a lot of good stuff. But I find... because, seriously, Chad, especially in music and stuff, we get excited about static and noise.
Sure.
Like, just because we see something all over the place momentarily, suddenly we're excited. So I'm just glad you brought that up because you said, yeah, but is it going to stick? Does it have staying power?
Right. The TV, no, I wouldn't consider that static and noise. That's an actual quantifiable hit. It's like me standing in a crowd and yelling. People are going to hear me. Mm. So you have that splash of exposure,
okay,
but are they going to leave that field that I was screaming in and be like, well, I need to go to that place because of what I just heard, or they're just aware of it?
Yeah,
beautiful analogies. Yeah,
I want to ask a few questions because Stone's probably going to turn my microphone off at me, just in case he does that. a lot of people don't know what a public relations firm does, and at a smaller level or a more micro level, what a publicist actually do. And what a lot of our listeners and viewers actually get out of this is an open gate to opportunities that they did not know about. A lot of people didn't know I did live events. Obviously, I mean, people who've listened before know that I've performed, I've worked at, I've coordinated a lot of festivals. True. Your side is even a mystery to me. but as Stone said in the beginning, the how to get into that, which is, you know, obviously building the relationships aspect of it. And then what actually goes into the PR side of a music festival? And then two, how do you find the track to even becoming a publicist? Because school isn't always the gateway to that. I know
that. Yeah. Neither myself nor my business partner ever took one PR class. Mm. She's a graduate of Auburn. I'm from upstate New York, so I went to a school no one's heard of.
SUNY.
SUNY, yes. Yeah, SUNY Fredonia.
Right on.
Shout out, Blue Devils.
There you go.
We didn't take any formal classes or anything like that. I honestly, it's almost like through association, knowing Karen, that's the only way I would be in the business now. I'd probably still be doing logos and whatnot, which we still offer, but you have to be a PR client for us to offer that. It's a value-added service, not something we actively go after. With the music festivals, Karen used to be the head of PR for Music Midtown. At the time, it was 11 stages, 300,000 people. It's a much smaller version now.
Yeah.
And did such a great job that there was a festival, I believe, the Echo Project, it was called. And they looked up and they knew that, okay, the only person that really knew how to do this was this woman, Karen West. She didn't want to touch it, so I took it and ran with it. So since then, it kind of collapsed. I mean, we do about 20 music festivals across the country a year.
What's the biggest one? Just a cut real quick.
It was, and I can't believe I'm giving them a shout out because they unceremoniously pushed me out of it. It was Imagine Music Festival here in Atlanta.
Really?
Yeah. I did that for about 8+ years.
Wow.
Now.
You want me to bleep it in the edit? I'm just. No, that's it.
I love Maddie and Glenn. They're still great people. You know, it was my time to go anyway. Right now, it's probably either Decadence or Gold Rush, and they're both Arizona-based festivals. Decadence has a sister festival in Colorado, which is Decadence Colorado, but that's my goal every year, to make sure that we get way more press than we do, and I'm on almost 10 or 3 years.
How do those campaigns come about? Like, what's the initial focus? What's the research that goes into each year? Because obviously, once you do it for 2 or 3 years, it could be cut and paste, but that's not how you grow it.
Right.
So how do you guys approach the start phase of getting the PR going for an upcoming festival? How far out, and what does that look like?
Typically, it's about 6 months out. Depending on the client, it could be Decadence has a name that's reputable. All we need to do is toss out the date. Which actually, Decadence may be a bad idea because it's always the 30th and 31st of December. It's a Gold Rush or whatever it would be. But a lot of times we'll at least do an initial announcement on the lineup. Lineups are great, and lineups used to fuel all the press and music festival publicity, but
before
it's the experience now. People want, you know, okay, I've seen Shaq. He's got his new record out, Diesel. Mm-hmm. Seen him a million times, or Diplo, or Skrillex, or whoever it would be. What else is going on at this festival? Mm-hmm. So it's our job, you know, we had a casino area, or we have rides, we have a market, you know, we have hidden stages. One stage at a festival I did, Dusk, it was hidden in the middle of the festival. You had to enter a porta potty.
Nice.
And once you opened it, you realize it wasn't a porta potty, and you went in, and it was a cupboard just in the middle of the festival.
Right. What was the
secret ticket to getting into that?
Like, just stumbling.
You got to know about it. Okay.
Yeah. All right. Oh wow.
That's what's up.
Yep.
So now, if you just have to go to the bathroom,
they didn't. They actually didn't tell me until the festival was active, so they didn't want me to publicize it.
Really?
Yeah.
So literally someone could have been like, yo, I got to take a leak. And they just happen to stumble. Yeah.
And then it becomes a word of mouth thing just from inside the festival.
That's actually kind of cool.
Yeah. Now, do you get to take credit for those things that happen when you promote? Like last year we had the porta potty event. Like, is that what you, do you play off of some of those past wins, or 100%. Is it always new? Okay.
I mean, we had Subtronics is a very hard electronic artist, and I'll play off of, he's coming back in October, but in this past April was the biggest live event that Arizona history, so we're able to, you know, capitalize on that and sell out. That thing's already sold out, right?
So obviously, now you said the lineup of the artists used to be the big draw.
Mm-hmm.
Now it's pretty much the experience, right?
Right.
So festivals, what's the biggest benefit do you feel festivals give to artists? Do you feel it's the exposure at all, or is it probably the payday? Like, do you, which do you feel?
Depends on the artist.
Well, that's for sure. Yeah. So let's take a moderate artist, and I wish I could think of someone by name, but I can't. I don't know their experiences with it. But all right, let's say they would get a nice healthy check. Say, is 30 grand considered moderate?
That'd be probably middle.
Middle group, middle, right?
Yeah.
So obviously you have some exposure if you're able to make that at a festival, right?
Sure.
Do you think the publicity and the visibility that they get at that festival, do you think the value from that would surpass that $40,000 paycheck? Or do you think they probably get more out of the money than? Because I question the exposure part.
I would say it'd be more about
timing? Are they releasing a record? Do they have anything timely coming up? Then the exposure itself is definitely going to outweigh the paycheck, would say. But, I mean, we, like, go back to Decadence. I mean, we have people that are performing at 10 o'clock at Decadence in Arizona, and we put them on a helicopter or flight, and we bring them to Colorado. They play that the same night, and they're pulling two paychecks, so you can't tell me the exposure is...
Well, that facts.
within hours, they're making that money.
Right, you know? That's true, too.
So, yeah, I guess it would be dependent on that.
Okay.
What about for the communities where the events are happening? From a PR standpoint,
I think that's a massive revenue generator for them. PR wise, it's kind of a double-edged sword. Some cities embrace it, other cities get such pushback from residents that it makes it pulls me into crisis behind the scenes, trying to manage those things and make sure that. They're happy so that we're invited back again next year or whatever it would be. You know, so the ones that cause the most trouble are when we block city streets and take off blocks downtown.
Yeah. And then like pollution, I would think, like trash and stuff like that.
That, right? Believe it or not, well, I guess it depends on the festival. The ones that I've been a part of, that tends to be the lesser of some of the issues.
We're almost every single thing I've ever done has been like a no trace type deal.
Yeah,
we have to bring the land, if it's in a field, back to...
Or it was the
same condition, if not better.
Right.
I had the opportunity this past summer. I was out in Indian Wells for Coachella, and right after, people don't know this, that two festivals happen every year at that time. You get Coachella, and then the following week you have Stagecoach. The residents there are on that end of the people who don't necessarily like the fact that it happens out there every year. They can't stand it because it's an older crowd, the noise and the music, the population that grows, it swells, they aren't necessarily for it. In those markets where you have something that's a staple, like a Stagecoach and a Coachella, does PR for it become more difficult, given that those two draw people from everywhere? Do you have to think about it from that standpoint, or do you just do your job as you would normally do it?
Like, imagine.
You would want to go to community meetings, create communication plans.
Some palm greasing going on is what I'm hearing.
At least
ego stroking.
At least answer the questions and whatnot that people might have to address the concerns. Make sure you have a hotline, those type of things.
Yeah. That's crazy. That's nothing that I would think about with PR.
Yeah.
I would not think about that stuff.
And that's what I was getting to from my next question is some of the things that happens. Like I said, it's you guys exist in everything that I do. I just don't know what y'all do. What are some of those things?
It means they're doing a good job.
It does. And it's one of those things. I mean, it's a lot of times, like when I'm there, like if I'm coordinating, if someone finds out who I am, that means that something's gone terribly wrong.
Right.
If I can go to work and the event's end and I can leave and nobody knows me, perfect.
Right.
So there's so many things that you guys have to take care of that go under the radar, from the concert goers to even the producers, coordinators, the technicians who work it. What are some of those things that you have to handle as a publicist to make sure that we're able to do what we do?
It's a lot of things. It's, you know, I would say crisis would be the most biggest thing, you know, even if it's just weather coming through, you know, working with the team that's monitoring our weather and creating communication so that, you know, if we need to tell you to, you know, drop your skirts so that the wind's not going to, you know, take the banners and pull a stage down.
Let's clarify what drop your skirts mean for people, because
we are talking about festivals here.
Yeah. Those are the on stages.
That would be a lift of skirt.
Well, I just want to make sure that we're clearing up what we're talking about.
That's after the festival.
I don't know.
You know, what we want to do, if you said that if people are aware of you, then there's trouble. Mm-hmm. But people should be aware of who I am.
Mm.
So by de facto, I'm the face of the festival to allow everybody else to do what you do.
Mm.
So there's an issue or whatnot. Obviously not security level type stuff,
right.
Although we have briefings with them all the time. On the face of it, let's address this. Let's see how we can fix this or optimize this. Oh, you know, we realize that Justin Bieber's being flown in to perform with Jack U, you know, and okay, cool. I alert the media leaks it. Crowd gets excited. You guys just make sure the performers get on stage and do their thing, that type of thing. So that's kind of just on-site it's called
operation.
So that's basically what I'm doing.
Well, let's do this because, again,
still not answering your question.
No, you did. But I want to point out the fact that a couple weeks ago, Fyre Festival 2 tickets apparently went on sale by announcement from Billy McFarlane himself. Mm-hmm. Now, if you don't know what Fyre Festival is, go find a documentary.
It was
watch a
fugazi, is what it was.
There was so much that went wrong with that.
Right.
Not having enough.
Well, you can't even get housing. The sandwiches right.
Absolutely.
It took me and my business partner about 4 hours to get through the documentary. It's not even close to 4 hours because we kept pausing it to discuss and be like, what the F is he talking about?
So from a public relations standpoint, is there a publicist worth their salt if they were to go through that vetting process that we talked about early on that would touch this thing, given the fallout and the blow up of the first one? I mean, the owner of the thing went to prison, if I'm not mistaken.
He did.
And Ja Rule made it into 50 Cent's book about it. So
I would say only someone looking to make a name for themselves. They're not caring about the job itself. They're looking to make a name for themselves. I would not. I think it would be detrimental to any other client relationship I have. Mm-hmm. So I would not.
Even if it went off well.
I'll let someone else be the guinea pig, and then I'll step in for three. If it goes well.
And this is me being Mr. Positivity, Mr.
Yeah.
You know.
I heard people were buying the tickets, though.
Tickets
have almost sold out.
Yeah.
No, they're almost sold out. And the reason why.
That's ridiculous.
But is
me being Mr. Optimistic.
Yeah.
Is I would think that this one would go off. Not without a hitch, because you can never guarantee that, even if you're legit. But it would go off really better because of how bad. Like, he almost wrote the playbook on how to fail at putting on a music festival. Mm-hmm. And so all you got to do is just read this whole book of what not to do to do a successful one. What idiot would truly be like, hey, I want to go through the defamation in prison again. Like seriously, I feel like that part plays in the concert goers' favor.
Okay.
Unless he truly is a glutton and just the definition of dumb.
Mr. Scheer, what do you think?
Unless his cellmate was Disco Donnie or Golden Voice or something like that.
Who's going to fund it?
Who taught him how to do a festival while he was in prison? I mean, so he doesn't. There's no new knowledge that he gleaned besides what not to do, which I guess you could fall backwards and maybe produce as well. I think I wouldn't have called it Fyre Festival. I would have taken, if I was involved and I was him, I would have taken a hidden role and let somebody, a reputable producer, go. And on the back end, if it's successful and you want to be like, surprised it's been me.
Yeah.
Then so be it.
But. Yeah, and it is, and that for everyone else, I think that part is a guinea pig position. Mm-hmm. But for him, if he truly is a 180 degree turnaround, I'm doing this thing right kind of guy, that is a gamble I would absolutely take on myself, because that is from a zero to hero. To me, there's no better publicity than that. You know what I mean?
It's probably the easiest PR gig you would get. People are going to write about it regardless, so it's just reactionary PR. The hardest part is vetting who you would actually okay to do interviews with him, because the interviews are always going to be about what happened,
what
is happening,
right?
And you really don't want to talk about those. I want to focus on what's going forward. Right. So that's the nightmare part of it. But otherwise, I mean.
He's like, hey, I ain't
my son
is all I know.
Has never done PR and he's only 19, and he could crush it.
There you go. Now you said something that I feel is it was super subtle, but I don't want to gloss over. You just like you wouldn't have called it Fyre Festival,
right?
a lot of times you're handed projects that you obviously didn't have a part of in the consulting process, mm-hmm. and you have to take what's given. Do you take time to consult clients who come to you with a fully fleshed out idea on, hey, this is a pitfall, mm-hmm. this is going to cause problems, let's take a few steps back before we do this? Or is it they're cutting a check and you let them crash and burn?
I would like to be... just put it out there. Care Must PR is not a yes person. We're not yes men.
Okay.
So I probably say no more than I should. And I'm dealing with a potential festival coming to town in 2024. And we, almost every conversation is us advising them on don't do that.
Mm-hmm.
No, I mean, as far as the namings, I mean, it's hilarious because every single, we have trackers that anytime anyone mentions Phoenix Lights or Gold Rush or anything like that,
mm-hmm.
we get alerts,
right.
you know, besides our own research. And all these festivals are like with Imagine. I get more hits about Imagine Dragons than I do.
Yeah.
All right, yeah. you know, and Phoenix Lights is a big UFO phenomena out in Arizona.
Oh, mm-hmm. wow, that we sucks.
Have, so I get... You got to filter through all that right. stuff and create your own narrative, I guess.
So how big is the team to doing that? Is it just the two of you?
No. Right now we're at 7.
Okay.
When we are on site, like when I did media operations for Imagine, I believe we have an expanded field team that goes out to about a dozen.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we're operating the pits at the stages for media coming in, taking photography. Someone's dedicated just to interviews. I'm pretty much floating around in case there's an issue, or
mm-hmm.
which there always is.
So Fire Festival is, so I can't remember who did PR for that. I remember it all came out at one point. That's their greatest nightmare, hands down.
Coyote and a roadrunner, as far as I know.
Everybody has a nightmare in mm-hmm. their career path.
Are you reading my question?
You've had one crash and burn. I'm sorry. I got to remember, I do this professionally, Stone Stafford. This is, give us yours. The one that, not even so much the one that was the greatest failure, but one that felt like you did everything right. You had all the promo done properly. Mm-hmm. Everyone was media trained properly. Everything was lined up, and then it just did not go well. What was it, and what was the thing that caused that to happen? Or you can leave it unnamed.
I love the little laughs before the answer, because I find myself bracing myself.
Sometimes people are probably still clients, so you got to be careful about what you say.
There's several examples. I mean, I have a myriad of examples. You know, there's the festival where I experienced my very first death, and I managed that with media so well that when it came out in the newspapers, the mention of the death made it to the third page in the living section at the bottom this big.
Wow.
That meant I did my job really well, but to be honest with you, I walked away and teared up because I was almost ashamed that, because that person has a mom and a dad right. and all that type of stuff. The biggest crisis or the biggest challenge that we've been involved with was this festival Tomorrow World. That was here in mm-hmm. Atlanta for a few years. We had pitched them several times and did not understand why we were not being waved in to handle PR. No one did what we did in town, and it made no sense. And this is, you know, Tomorrowland is the biggest in the world.
Right.
Tomorrow World was the American version of it out of Chattahoochee Hills. And we get a call 45 days out. And they're like, hey, would you come in and give us a shot in the arm locally? Their national team, I won't name them, they know who they are, was getting, you know, they're in GQ, they're in Playboy, they're getting all the mm-hmm. great hits. They're not even getting, no AJC mention, no Thrillist, no nothing. Mm. So in 45 days, we flip it for them, crush it, have every news channel out there, including CNN, filming throughout the day. First day is overcast, and it's little misty rain. Second day, the rain is just annoying enough, or just steady enough to be annoying. Mm-hmm. And then third day, we wake up and we're staying at a hotel maybe a couple miles off site. And they're like, hey, don't come here. We closed down the site. No one in, no one out. So, I mean, if you're camping there and you want to leave early and don't be in the rain, you're stuck there until Monday morning. So we, they're like, go back to your offices because you'll have dedicated Wi-Fi there and operate. But then they also censored us and wouldn't let us talk to media. And we kept advising and advising and advising. It was like, no, this particular PR company, the national one, they have it under control. And so what happened is social media and people saying that they walked 25 miles without passing a gas station or anything like that. The festival had cut all transportation.
Oh, so they had a horrible narrative.
But I mean, the thing is, social media just took that and ran with it. If you walk 25 miles from the festival site and didn't pass a gas station, you must be walking in a circle because the airport is only like 15 miles. Right. So what happened is that company was fired and they kept us on for another 60 days to clean up their mess. But that probably was the worst of what.
Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, on the flip side, what's like the biggest perk or the biggest win you feel, you perk or win, that you had?
Oh, my gosh.
There's so many.
No, I mean, for me, I think that makes me, my heart hurt because I think I'm probably focusing just on the negative. I got us on the cover of Billboard for a festival called Camp Bisco. It's upstate New Yorker, and I think now it's in Pennsylvania. Mm-hmm. That was a huge win. I don't know.
Cover of Billboard is pretty big.
It's pretty big. I was going to say.
Yeah. And I mean, I'm going to be honest, I haven't heard of that particular festival. So
yeah, it was a jam and electronic festival, which is a real weird kind of mixing. And it was the Disco Biscuits Festival, which is kind of a jam band. They played, I'm not a jam fan at all. They played an obnoxious amount of times. They would play two sets a day for four straight days.
Whoa.
I'm like, oh.
Whoa, man.
I'm like, come on, man. Can something,
they were getting paid by the set. Had to be. Like, that's the only way they were like,
and they're friends. I'm friends with Aaron, and I was just like, oh, my God, man.
Like, can we get the foghorns out here or something, yeah. Anything? All right, so, well, you have one before I was going to ask.
Well, it was going to be after the pickup and the cleanup of that one that went terribly wrong here. What was you guys' recovery time? Or were you head first into the next project?
During that period, those projects were spaced pretty well.
Okay.
We almost did not get Imagine Music Festival because of our association with Tomorrow World. Mm-hmm. A lot of people thought that was CWPR because although we were only on for 45 days and we didn't have control of the crisis part of it, mm-hmm. We are the local face. That festival leaves town and we're still here. Mm-hmm. You know, so it was kind of a detriment.
Yeah, how much PR did you have to do on yourself?
I mean, we kept our heads low. We just word of mouth. We didn't know if that festival was coming back or not. We knew if it did, we were taking it over. The entire thing. We're not partnering with anybody. Right.
You didn't close the door on doing it again at all. You just, right. Cause I figured it would've been like a hands off.
No, not
tainted stain or something.
And I think without social media, the festival would have survived.
Okay.
It was not as a big of a deal as it was being made out to be. And that's, again, my opinion. And I will tell you, I do have a win.
Okay.
All right. My win was during the pandemic. First, we did the very first drive-in event out in Arizona with Carnage, and that was a success. That was the first nationally.
A drive-in festival.
Yeah.
Interesting.
So that was pretty good. But we partnered with a company called Rival Entertainment. They do a lot of events across the city, and they created this thing called Big Night Out. and we did it in pods. So you take like bike racks and people, everybody has their 6x6 area, and Big Boy, Killer Mike, Fanagram, you know, it was really, really successful. And it was in October of 2020, and it was things where people just needed to get out. Mm-hmm. And we got Centennial Olympic Park opened it just for us. As soon as it was over, that entire park closed down and no one could even hang out in there.
Right.
That was a big success for us.
Okay. These relationships that you guys have sometimes rival that of politicians. I've seen publicists who know people. I mean, the whole scandal thing was
Kerry Washington. Thing. Yeah.
That whole, like, the reason why she was able to be the fixer was because she knew everyone, mm-hmm. and was almost the puppet master behind everything. How much power do you guys have in making these things happen? Because, like you said, Centennial Olympic Park literally opened just for that. Did you pull some strings to make that happen, or
not on my end? No, I would give that straight to Josh Antonucci.
okay.
I don't want to take any credit where credit isn't due. No, I would say that the majority of those types of things our clients do, and it's our job to kind of expose them in the best possible way.
Okay.
All right. So you're a music fan, obviously.
And I have another one. We did
24. See, this is why you give opportunity for the positive.
24 events in 4 days during the past Super Bowl.
Wait, what? What?
Yeah. In Arizona.
How?
I had to slow down on the math on
no,
that.
No, seriously, how?
24 events in 4 days?
We were having simultaneously all over, and they weren't small either. I mean, we were doing Gronk's Beach Party. We did the Guy Fieri Flavortown thing. We had something with Tim McGraw on one night and Marshmello on the second night at Westworld, the Playboy Party, the Sports Illustrated event with Machine Gun Kelly.
Okay, so
how does he even have the bandwidth and manpower?
How do you source and staff that to be able to maintain? Because I mean, the Super Bowl by itself, if you've got two events, you're stretched.
Yeah, Relentless Beats is pretty. I mean, we've been with them for 10 years, and they produce about 400 events a year.
Mm-hmm.
Most of them, obviously, like club or smaller engagements. But they partnered, you know, with Medium Rare, which is another big thing you'd see with Shaq's Funhouse. That was mm-hmm. another event that we did. So we were the experts in the area. So we were able to, so when Sports Illustrated came in, they created the event, but we were the ones that were producing it.
And
that
gotcha.
Sort of thing.
Gotcha.
So we were able to manage that
okay.
way.
No, that okay. That makes sense, because I'm thinking you guys are spearheading top to bottom, and then probably.
It's a big staff, but you know, I mean, if you're doing something at, like, we had Travis Scott at Maya Day Club. That, you know, that club itself has its own mm-hmm. existing staff. We're probably just running ticketing,
Type
of thing, and publicity.
How market to market. They're going to be different challenges, different successes, different eases. Which market is your favorite one to work in, and why is that to promote events?
Arizona's probably my favorite market to PR. Given my advanced age, Atlanta, there's something sweet about getting in my car and driving home and going to bed.
Very
practical.
Instead of jumping an Uber or whatever and staying in another nameless hotel. Or whatnot. You know, we have one coming up called Highball in October at Pullman Yards, and that's going to give me great joy, because it's my neighborhood where I live. In Atlanta, almost every single neighbor's already bought VIP tickets. They're so excited, and I'm like the king.
But
Arizona, I really enjoy on the PR side, and I've been able to do some pretty fantastic things out there. And they went from zero PR to me 10 years ago, so it's been a joy.
Cool.
All right, I guess I got to get your personal opinion. Now we're just going to talk about music in general a little bit.
I love it.
Like, what's your opinion on the music scape right now? Like, what do you feel is happening with it as far as – and we can take it from different angles. We won't necessarily look on the business side of it so much, but just on the creative side. Like, where do you think music is going? One reason why I'm asking is, like, Billboard pointed out recently that
it's been 23 years since a rap song hasn't cracked the hot, hasn't been number one on the Hot 100.
Yep.
And the fact that we're talking about rap and it's not, there's something obviously happening. So what do you feel is happening with the whole music scape right now?
I would also say that it took 6 months for a rap artist to crack number one this year. And that was Lil Uzi Vert with Pink Tape.
Right.
I know that because we're doing a festival with Lil Uzi in 2 weeks out in Arizona.
Okay.
What do I think? I think it's a bit, I hate to say this, and some of my team members, all my team is younger than me, so Riley.
I'm going to get the old guy curmudgeon answer. Is that what we're about to get?
I think that a lot of music, it seems to be disposable.
Absolutely, 100%.
I think that
that was a response a publicist would give.
It's
a true response.
When I was a kid, you go and a record would come out, and it was like a Michael Jackson Thriller or whatever it would be, Police Synchronicity. And then it would be like 4 years before the next record, a follow up would come out.
Right.
And there was anticipation.
Right, right.
The anticipation is a little bit lost. That's not necessarily just the artist's fault. I would think that that is also the vehicle that the music is delivered. It's a lot easier to stream it, you know, Spotify, whatever it would be. So it's not as, the anticipation isn't, I don't really ever get excited for a record to come out anymore.
Not at all.
Anticipation gets looked at bad now, too. I mean, people are looking at Cole and Dot. You know, they don't drop something in 2 years and mad.
And the long format is gone, too.
Yeah.
It's the single.
Single, for sure. You know. And even that's different from back in the day, because back then, I'm trying to just think some random off the top of Gloria Gaynor, right? What was it? I Will Survive, is it?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so I don't know how many people know a Gloria Gaynor album. Mm-hmm. She had one. I think she had three, right? I forget the number, but not too many people are going to think Gloria Gaynor album. You're going to think I Will Survive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But the thing is, they milked that single. I mean, used it for any and everything that they could.
Sure.
But now you got people like, and I love Drake, don't get me wrong, super talented, and I'm not just saying it'd be nice. I truly think he's talented, easily one of my favorite artists, but I mean, we're looking at a song, almost like a song a week, it feels like. You know what I mean? Like, every time I turn around, there's a new Chris Brown record out.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So, you don't even get a chance. And I get it. It is the society we're living in. Because the speed at which everything moves and gets consumed now. But I'm of the mindset that if everyone is going at 100, don't you stick out going at 40? And if you don't believe me, try that on freaking I-85. You will stick out, like you'll have everyone's attention,
right?
Because you're doing the speed limit, and everyone, yeah, they might be cussing you out, but you have their attention.
You will get run.
So
off the
in
road.
Music, like craft, why not milk that single for tie it to any and everything? Like let people live and fall in love with that single.
I don't think it's.
But I don't even know if it's possible because literally the attention span almost doesn't even allow these kids to do it. So I agree with you.
You'd have to do something frankly. That's so transformative musically to be able to last because everyone is one. A lot of the stuff still sounds the same.
So let me get your opinion, both of you.
Okay.
So I do music business coaching, coaching, right? You're MBC on Instagram. So,
there you go.
Hey, it's my platform. I might as well plug myself, right?
100%.
So anyway, but what I was thinking personally, I was talking about concept albums.
Mm-hmm.
Not a ton of them.
Mm-hmm.
Not really a ton of them. I think the space is wide open for them personally because they're not done. Going back to what you're saying is like give them a reason to stay. Give them a reason to want to. Right. What'd you say? Instead of being a flash in the pan, you didn't use that term, but static and noise, right? Yeah, you make that splash, but why would they stay? Why do they want to come? Let them give them a story to follow. Give them something. I mean, that's what I personally feel like there's room for concept albums.
Yeah,
I'm assuming you agree.
Yeah, no, I mean it's some of my favorite records. I mean, 100%.
Yeah,
I mean, I think with a concept record, you also have to kind of praise the resurgence of vinyl because you know with that concept, you want to be able to open it up and see what the visual story is as well. Read the lyrics, see who's on that record.
Right.
You know, oh, they use these players that, oh, I know them from another record. That's no wonder I like that.
Now, so how do we translate that to 2023, right? Going back to your videos, instead of just shooting a flashy video to the song, right? The video should have some kind of concept, a continuing concept, but then a whole lot of BTS stuff too, as well. So where in our days, it was just looking at credits on a piece of paper, but on this one, you're visually watching the credits, looking at the bass player in the session or whatever. I'm telling you right now, it's a billion dollar idea. I'm just waiting for someone creative enough to hop on it.
I have a slightly different
take on it. I'm pretty sure someone's probably done it.
No, they're working on it. Yeah. I think it's because you said you want both of our opinions, so I'm going to give you
absolutely.
And I'm going to keep the mic here this time. I feel like there's absolutely room for it, but I think it's going to get pushed into the niche area because Kendrick did a concept album, and it was dope.
Yep.
I mean, if you're not a Kendrick fan, you don't know about it. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm not going to say you don't know about it. I mean, I think it still went platinum.
Good Kid,
but it was and I mean, it's a dope record, but it's, I feel like the masses, and some of this might be y'all's fault, the dumbassification of the masses has gotten to a critical mass point so high that the concept of a concept album would go over somebody's head because they would zone in on whatever, which one feels like a single. And then that just becomes the, this is what I play all the time. Because I've watched that
look
happen.
Look at you with the whole valid opinion.
Thank you so much. I try sometimes. I don't want to resemble my,
like
my
that,
generation.
The whole concept of the concept album might go over their heads.
Yeah. And that's what I think. I mean, I'm hoping that it comes back. I think I think the art form itself needs that because it requires deep thought to even to come up with what is my concept going to be. Right. And then it puts you in a completely different creative zone because you're driving towards something.
Yes.
So, you know, the want to is one thing. And then the cognitive evolution to even go through that creative process has to be there for it to happen. So I want it to come back. I think there actually is room for it, but I don't think the masses are going to be able to digest it.
Concept album. Would y'all like a life concept album?
I'm down.
Are you a musician?
No.
Okay.
That's my dark
secret. I would have definitely paid
you.
Is
your dark secret?
Yeah.
I would have paid you. I'm not a musician.
Tell everybody what to do musically, and I'm not.
You got bass player written all over you, man. I just knew it.
Oh, man. No. If anything, I need to be a drummer or lead singer.
Okay.
Okay.
All right.
Can you carry a tune?
No.
We have apps for that.
How about a beat? Can you ride a beat?
No.
We all can dream.
Yeah. I haven't even tried.
That's all right. We talked to this one lady. We're going to get you this book, 6 Weeks to Happy. How to Achieve Your Dreams. But yo, man, I appreciate you coming on.
Yeah,
dude. I really, really do. And just so you know, and like you personally, so your PR, you and your company's PR goes beyond just music, right?
Yes.
Because you represent a mutual acquaintance of ours, Simone.
Oh, from the Georgia Hemp Company.
Yeah. Georgia Hemp Company.
There's some very big news about to drop from them.
We get a sneak peek when we turn the cameras off, right?
I can tell you, yeah.
All right. When it's off, okay.
And I was actually at another client's before I came here at right down the street, Boone's.
Okay.
It's a restaurant at Bobby Jones Golf Course.
You know.
That's right across the street from my house, yeah.
You know who I need to introduce you to. And you actually might know him. Actually, you remember him because we did the Shrimp Podcast together. Post Meridium, Andrew, Rod Bell.
Yeah.
Would that be someone you could work with, do you think?
I've worked with him already in the past.
I'm late.
Look at you.
I'm late. Look at me. Trying to hook people up in the past.
Strike.
My heart's in the right place. I'm just such a fan.
That's a good company. That's,
I'm just such a fan of that company and that product, man. I really want to see him win.
Same, me too.
If you want to go after those canned cocktails, that's the one to go.
It
it's
is.
All real ingredients. It's,
Free shout out, man. Post Meridium. With an M on the end.
If you guys I'm still doing your PR when I'm not.
You're not even
doing it. Look at Andrew. Yeah, those pre-made that's the one to go, man. Yeah. Pure ingredients, not a whole lot of mess and stuff like that. So check them out if you can. Andrew Robbell shouting you out, man.
Yep.
We love that company. So.
Chad, how do we find your company, you, and what's coming up next with you guys?
Okay, our company, Karen West PR. Karen is spelled with a C.
C-A-R-E-N.
Doesn't want to get confused with the crazy people, huh?
Yeah, she hates that.
I know. I just talked to Stassi the other day that one lady has ruined the name Karen
for
everyone.
Seriously.
Say the address again.
Yeah. It's CarenWestPR.com. W-E-S-T, like West, the West. Direction.
Karen West.
If you care to see a lot of music, Instagram type stuff. Mine is CHADAVID.
Nice.
And what's next is a festival called If You Know, You Know with Lil Uzi Vert, Metro Boomin, Denzel Curry, Rico Nasty, and Jaleel. I believe that's it. That's in Phoenix, Arizona on September 9th.
Is there anything coming up in Atlanta that you're allowed to talk about yet?
Highball Festival.
Mm-hmm.
That is, I have to look up the dates, October, I believe, 20th and 21st. With it's a curated festival experience by a band called Future Birds out of Athens, Georgia. They booked the band or the festival with people that they've either influenced or have influenced them. So it'll have Band of Horses headlining one night and the Head and the Heart headlining the other. Future Birds play both nights as well. And then it is a reunion for this band, The Wigs, out of Athens as well. And that's at Pullman Yards.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Awesome.
Oh, busy.
Yeah. Where can they find you,
homie? Just Johnny Vaughn, JustJohnnyVaughn on the stuff.
Y'all know what it is. Was that good as far as Atlanta? Y'all know what it is?
Nah.
No? All right. Y'all know what it is. StoneStafford.com. You can find anything and everything on my social media. If you want to schedule a coaching thing, I'm on there as well. StoneStafford.com. And then LifeOnPodcast.com. That's where you can find anything Life on Podcast. You can listen or watch. Doesn't matter. But one thing Life on Podcast won't do for you is tell a friend. So we need you to tell a friend. Like, subscribe. We're still trying to hit that 2023. We're at 1 million subscribers in 2023, man. So help us get there. We appreciate y'all. We love y'all. Shout out to Blue Widow, only Blue on Instagram, only in BLU number 3. She's part of an array of an EDM thing called Brain World. And she loves music festivals, my girl Emily. So whenever I talk about music festivals, she's always the first person to pop in my head. So y'all go show her some love on some eyes on IG and check out Brain World. All right, we're out. We love y'all. Thank you so much for your support. Chad, thanks for joining us, homie.
Man.
We appreciate you. We're out. Peace.